This week's parsha is Shoftim, and what I want to do this evening is to talk a little bit about a Jewish government. This is the parsha. It really talks about ideally what type of a system should be created in order to govern the Jewish people. Societies in general always have to decide, what type of system that they'll have. To create law and order, what type of ruling system, whether it's a democracy, whether it's a monarchy, socialism, capitalism, communism, and all different types of forms of government that different nations currently have had in the past, will have in the future. You figure out, what works for your particular society, and obviously some work a lot better than others. Some are very I would say cruel it's a rule of one, and it's people are often at the mercy of government, and sometimes it's more fair and more democratic, and there's all different types of systems. So the Torah outlines I believe a system for us, but I'd like to share with you a fascinating observation by the Nitziv, people quote this Nitziv a lot, but I believe the Ramban seems to say a similar idea as to, is the Torah exact, and is the Torah insistent on one particular system, or is the Torah more give us options in terms of what type of government we have, and it's sort of left up to us to create whatever system works best for us. We know there's a teaching Pirkei Avos that says if you don't have a system of government, if there's no fear of the government, so that's a place that where there's going to be a chaos, and there's going to be a place to stay far away from that. You should pray for the welfare of the government. Yechezkel tells the Jewish people in exile to pray for the welfare of the government. Again, it's mentioned in Pirkei Avos that whether it's a Jewish society or a non-Jewish society, and you're living there, you want there to be some semblance of law and order and some respect for government, for their services should be provided. So again, so this is the parsha, I believe, of Parsha of Shoftim that really outlines how to create perhaps an ideal type of government system, a nation, and where services are provided and there's law and order. So the parsha, of course, opens up with the idea of Shoftim v'Shotrim, that number one, you need judges. And you need the officers, titein lecha b'chol sharecha, that in all your gates, everywhere, there needs to, Rashi says, b'chol ir v'ir, the Sifrei says, every single city, right? There has to be a mechanism where the law is upheld, where it's enforced, where there's a court system, and there's officers, and people are going to maintain and guarantee that people are following the various laws that govern that particular society. But then, of course, the Torah tells us that it has to be a system that's fair, that's of righteousness. And it gets into tzedek tirdof, of pursuing our righteousness, and the judges can't take bribes and can't favor one side or the other. But the bottom line is that there needs to be within every society some type of a system where there's laws and laws that are enforced, that they're fair laws, but they're enforced, and that there's a judicial system to create that type of environment. So that's number one. That's critical, because if you don't have that, you have chaos, you have anarchy. There's going to be a situation. There's going to be a situation where people are just not going to be able to function in such a society when they're constantly fearing for their lives. There's people just running around and causing all types of pain and suffering and chaos. That's not a place to live. So that's number one. Then the Torah continues, and it discusses what happens when you're not sure about a law. What happens when you're uncertain about what to do? which comes up all the time. New situations arise, new issues emerge, and so the Torah has a mechanism. Ki palei mimcha davar lemishpat ben dam ledam ben din ledin ben nega lenega divrei rivos b'sharecha. That when you have questions regarding law, ritual law, civil law, tort law, all different types of things, so the Torah tells us that you need to create a high court that you're going to go to, and where is it going to be? The Torah tells us the Kamtavalisa, the place that God will choose you, and we have a tradition that's the base of Mikdash. That's within the base of Mikdash. That's where the Sanhedrin HaGadol sat, the great court of 70 or 71 members. They were the final body that would determine, what the law would be. That there were lower courts, but if they didn't know, they were uncertain. So there was this ultimate high court, the Sanhedrin. And and if you go to the judge of at your time and you ask the question, and then you have to follow what they say. So two things. Number one, the Mefarshim pick up on the expression "Ashir Yeh B'Yamim Ahem," that you listen to the judge, it will be in your day. So the question is, what, you listen to the person who's not yet born, the person who lived 500 years ago? So they're not around now to ask the question. And obviously, if it's a question that you have, it was a question that was not asked 500 years ago. You have already had an answer. So who else are you going to go to? So the answer, the way Chazal understand, is that obviously you go to the judge who's around in your days. But what happens if you say, "Hey, but I remember the good old days. When I was growing up, they were much more qualified. They were much greater scholars. All right, these guys don't compare to the people, who were around 60 years ago." So the answer is, tough luck. You do the best. And if they're corrupt, if they're no good, that's not something else. But if they're honest, genuine people, then you deal with what you have. And they have to be the ones to go to. And you can't say, "Well, I don't like them," or "They're not who I remember 40 years ago when I was at a different stage in life." You have to go with what you have, and they're the ones who you have to turn to. And you have to follow what they say, whatever they say, you have to do it. And so our rabbis say, even the judges who disagree, right, the way the court system works, it's by majority. So let's say there were some who disagreed. Once the decision is rendered, then everyone has to follow the majority. That's another thing that we learn out from here. So the parsha begins, like, number one is law and order. All right, number one is creating a society where laws are enforced, where there's a mechanism to go to people where you're not certain about laws, and for those decisions and for those questions to be asked, decisions to be rendered, and then for people to follow those laws. Essentially, that's the first thing that's talked about in our parsha. Like, that is crucial. That is critical. What's the next thing? So this is the famous thing. The next thing is now government, and specifically the Melech, the king. The Torah says, "Kisavola aret ba." You'll go into the land that God says I will choose for you, and you will conquer it, and you will settle in it. At that point, "Som tasim alacha," you shall place a king upon you, "Asher yivchar Hashem bo," that God will choose. Right, from amongst your people, it has to be Jew, has to be Jewish. Right? It can't be not someone who's not Jewish. It has to be a Jew has to be appointed as your king. But then I skipped over one phrase that there's a lot of discussion about this one phrase. Pasuk says when you enter the land, so before saying you shall place a king upon you, it says, "Vamarta," and you will say, "Asima alai melech." You will say, "I want a king. I want to place a king upon me." Kachol goyim asher sivosai, like all the other nations around me. At that point, "Tzom tasim alacha melech," you shall place a king upon you. The famous question is the Torah telling us to put a king, that we should appoint a king? or the Torah is just responding to our request. Like, if you say that I want a king, then okay, then have a king. But God's not necessarily telling you to have a king. And to further strengthen the question is the famous question about, well, we know this, what was the story about the first king of the Jewish people, Shaul? So that what happened in that story, if you remember from Sefer Shmuel, Shmuel was the prophet, and the people came to Shmuel and they asked for a king. And what was Shmuel's response? He was not happy with it. He was very disappointed, and he was upset. And he warned the people that if you have a king, you got to listen to the king, and if the king takes things from you, he's every right to do that. He wasn't happy with the request, and the question is, why was he not happy? Right? Because if it's a mitzvah of the Torah to have a king, so they were doing a good thing by asking for a king. It's a famous question, and before everyone talks about that question, they say maybe did they ask for it the right way? Were they more interested, in just being like the nations of the world, and sort of turning away from Hashem? Was Shmuel, was he qualified to lead them? And they didn't necessarily need a king in Shmuel's time period. That's what the Ramban suggests in Sefer Bereishis. Says that they didn't really need a king at that point because they had a Shmuel sort of serve that role. Whatever the case may be, again, it just begs the question, what exactly is the Torah telling us? Like, does it have to be a king, or does it not have to be a king? And what if I don't want a king? I want a democracy, or I want a communist system, or something. Is that acceptable? What exactly is the Torah telling us? And just one more point before I share with you the Ramban and the Nativ, and that is the Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin tells us the following. It says when the Jewish people enter the land of Israel, there's three things that they had to do. There's three things that they had to do. So they had to conquer the land, right? They had to conquer and to divide the land. But it says that they had to appoint a king, and they had to build a base of Mikdash. Right? These are the responsibilities that were placed upon the Jewish people, and we know that they initially didn't build a base of Mikdash. They initially didn't appoint a king either. Right? There was no king in Israel for over 300 years after they entered, with the time of Yoshua. Well, after it took them 14 years to conquer and to divide the land, and there was no king. And if those of us familiar with Sefer Shoftim, not Parsha Shoftim, but the Book of Judges, knows that one of the refrains that repeats itself over and over again in Sefer Shoftim is Ein Melech BiYisrael. There was no king in Israel. He's called Yashar Be'Enav Tasa. Everyone did was upright in their eyes, which implies that there was no central body of authority, no system of law and order. And as a result, there was often chaos. There was often people doing what they want, and often straying from God. There was often strife and all different types of difficulty. There's a terrible story of the Pelegish Begivah, and the pestle of the idol of Micha, and Ein Melech BiYisrael. There was no king. So the implication is that they needed a king. That it was important to have a king. So which one is it? Should they have a king? Should they not have a king? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? So the Ramban says, let me first read the Nitziv, and then I'll show you. I think the Ramban is saying the same thing. This is a quote-unquote famous Nitziv. The Nitziv did not live all that long ago. The Nitziv lived in the mid-1800s. Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. He was the Rosh Yeshiva, the famed Volozhin Yeshiva. And he wrote a comment. He wrote a lot of things. One of the things he wrote this commentary on Chumash, the Hamakdavar, and here's one of his famous insights. So he's bothered by the question. On the one hand, it says, "Som tasim alachamel," he shall place a king upon you. It sounds like it's a mitzvah, but it's introduced by saying, "V'amarta," and you will say, "Asim alay melech." But you'll enter the land and you'll say, "Can I have a king?" Which sounds like it's optional. Right, the next pasuk says you shall place the king, but the first pasuk seems to say it's up to you whether to have it or not. So he says, "Eina pirish amira kamashmo bepeh, ela kalashon varmarta ochla basar kedoma." He compares it to eating meat. Do you have to eat meat? The answer is no, right? No, you don't have to eat meat. If you eat meat, so then there's certain laws that govern eating the meat. You got to slaughter properly, you got to salt it, properly. You got to make sure it's a kosher animal. If you eat the meat, you got to wait, 6 hours till you then eat dairy. There's certain, you don't have to eat the meat, but if you're going to eat the meat, so then there's certain laws that govern it. So he said, "Achin lefi loshen zeh, hey b'mashma she'ein zeh mitzvah b'muchlat." On the surface, it appears that if there's no mitzvah per se to appoint a king, el rishus, it's optional. V'amarta, if you happen to want a king, okay. So here the Torah will then describe, the mechanism of what the king, should be, what kind of king, and the laws governing the king. It's like if you want meat, you don't have to eat meat. If you want to eat meat, okay, then there's laws governing that meat. So he says, on the other hand, our rabbis understand that it's a mitzvah to appoint a king. They understand Som Tassil is a mitzvah. And in fact, the Jewish people, again, that's one of the things the Jews had to do when they entered Israel, they had to appoint a king. But if that's the case, Lamai Ksiv Amartos. Again, why is it introducing it? And you will say, I want a king. Where else is it? You will say, I want a sukkah. Okay, you say you want a sukkah. Okay, now there's a mitzvah to build a sukkah. You say, I want to hear the shofar. Okay, so sound the shofar. It doesn't get presented like that. God says, Yom Teruah, it's a shofar, it's a day of shofar blowing. All right, the Torah says, you must dwell in the sukkah for 7 days. It's not like it's a request that you make. God just tells you to do it. So what is this a request or this is a command? Vinira, so he says it appears. Dimishum dan hagas hamedina mishtana. So he says, this is the fascinating thing that he says that people quote. He says that every country is different. Every nation is different. Imisnagal alpi das malucha, alpi das av nivchareim. Some countries, some societies work well with a monarchy, and that's how they can function best. And some, and this is a fascinating thing that he says, some work best through das ha'am, through the collective knowledge or the agreement of the people, v'nichrayim, and their choices and the ones that they choose. What does it sound like he's talking about? Sounds like some sort of democracy or something. Some sort of elections that the people decide, who their leaders will be. And it's up to the, and it's sort of, again, it's not just coming on high from a king and it's hereditary from father to son, but it's, every 4 years we're going to elections to elect a new president and elect the prime minister. Some countries cannot handle a monarchy. That will not work for them. They don't want that type of, coming down on high from, above and, that person, declaring the laws, but they want to be from bottom up. The people make the laws, the people, and they have the representatives, he says, Vayesh Medina. There are some countries shebelo melech without a king, hari kesfina b'li kavarnit. And there's some countries if they don't have a king, it's like a ship without a captain. They're gonna fall apart. Does they need a strong leader? They need to have like one person in charge. And if they don't have that, it's not gonna work out. So because what works for one is not gonna work for the other, he says. If you can't have an outright positive command that you must do this, you must appoint a king, because it's not necessarily going to work for every country, for everyone to have a king. And even in one generation, it may work, and in one generation, it may not work. One time period, based upon the circumstances of that time, the challenges, the opportunities of time, maybe you don't need a king. Another time, maybe you do need more of a monarchy type of system. And he says, mitzvah. He says, because at the end of the day, if it doesn't work out so well, it's the wrong person, the wrong system of government. You know what ultimately can happen? Lives are at risk. If this person is chaotic, if this person is dangerous, so people can get hurt, harmed. If this person is too weak, and it's this king's like, this person is your king because it's hereditary, but he's no good. So and the person's not in control of things, so then that doesn't work either. In other words, we're talking about life and death here, in terms of government, the importance of government. And for the Torah can't tell you this is the way you must do it, because if you must do it this way, it's not always going to work. So rather, basically what he's saying, it's the people need to decide what works best for them, and then when they request it, then it's a mitzvah to do it. In other words, that there needs to be some sort of system in place, right? There's got to be some central body that helps provide services, that is it, that's there to protect the people and to advocate for the people. But what works well for one system, for one time and place, will not necessarily work the same way in a different time and place. And I believe the Ramban says a similar idea. Again, the Tziv always gets credit for this, but I think that the Ramban seems to be saying the same thing, because the way it's presented in the Torah is that, 1 second, it says the following. Here, he says the following. The Hiskir v'Amarta, again, it says, and you will ask for the king, ki mitzvah she'avol l'fnei ha'kohanim ha'levim, v'lo shofet. The people, what do they need to do? They need to go to those who are the judges of their time. They need to go to their Kohanim and the Levium, and they need to say, "Hey, we need a king, right? We desire a king." In other words, the people need to make this request. It's not that it can be imposed upon them. But it's the people need to decide which government is going to work best for them. Now, this is a little bit novel, this idea, because we generally assume, no, there's a mitzvah to have a king. This is saying, again, the Tziv says it clearly, and I think the Ramban is saying this as well, is that really the Torah is not necessarily telling us what form of government to have. It's just saying you need to have a government. All right, there needs to be law and order. Someone's got to, put together an army and create a system of defense for the society, and to make treaties with other nations, and to help the economy. You need a government. You need a government. But what government you need? So again, the Tziv is saying perhaps it's left up to the people. And it's a very novel approach. That's not necessarily the simple reading of the Torah, but it comes about because of this strange way the Torah presents it. It doesn't say, it, before saying, put a king upon you, it says, and you will say, I need a king. It sounds like it's the people who need to recognize and to put together the form of government that they want. So I just want to make that point and just make two other final observations. So the first observation is the following. So whatever government you do choose to have, what the Torah says next is critical, because what the Torah now gives the laws that govern the king. So, and this is fascinating from a Jewish perspective. So you appoint a king, and why do you want the king? You want the king to again, for safety, safe security, financial reasons, law and order, all that stuff. But then the Torah gives laws that the king is bound to keep. In other words, normally if you're the king, you make the laws, right? No one tells you what to do. Well, it doesn't work that way in Judaism. And even if you're David HaMelech, you're Shlomo HaMelech, you're Chizkiyahu, whoever you are, Yoshio, wherever you are, God puts laws upon you. There's certain guidelines and restrictions and limitations. And so famously, what are they? Famously, I'll just read the Pesukim, the Torah says the following. First of all, the king has to be a Jew. Why does the king have to be a Jew? Because we want this person to create a Jewish society. We want the Jewish values. Be able to, and need to be able to relate to the people. And so if he doesn't share, the same values of the people, so there's this danger that it can lead the people astray or not be in line with what the Jewish society should look like. Number two, you shouldn't have a lot of horses, famously. Why shouldn't you have a lot of horses? Well, there's two reasons. Rashi quotes the Medrash, who says, because where the horses come from? Back in the day, they came from Egypt. The Torah itself says, right, that we're concerned that Lo Yashiv Esa'am Mitzrayimah. You're only going back to Egypt. We took you out of Egypt, you shouldn't be going back to Egypt. The Ramban says a little differently. The Ramban says, well, the real concern is that you need this the modern day equivalent of the horses would be tanks and airplanes and your limousines and all your entourage. So you need whatever you need for the government to exist, to create a stable military, for defense and things like that. But it shouldn't be anything for the glory of the king. It's not about the ruler. Again, whether it's a king, whether it's a democracy, president, prime minister, whatever the system is, it's just about society and what's best for the people. In other words, whoever's ruling the government, whatever type of government you have, they have to recognize that they're just God's servants, and they're the servant of the people. They're just working for the Jewish people. It's nothing to do about their kavod, their honor, and their glory. And if you have like all these horses and all these tanks and all these limousines, that's just to show off and to for your own narcissistic feeling good about yourself and showing off. Tourists stay far away from that. That's not allowed. Number two, you can't have too many wives. Again, the concern there, Chazal understand, is that the Torah itself says, "Le'asur levavo," that it perhaps will turn you astray, and you're going to be your mind is going to be on other things, and it's going to create a situation within the life within the king. Again, have too much affluence and too many physical things to worry about, because then it then says, and you can't have too much gold and silver. Right? It's not about massing wealth and your own needs to be a little bit. There has to be some, people have to respect you, the other nations have to respect you, but it can't go to your head. And then finally, what else? The king has to have write his own Sefer Torah, and has to carry it with him all his days, which is fascinating. In other words, that what guides the king? It's the Torah that guides the king. Just like the Torah guides the simplest Jew, that same Torah guides the king. The king can't violate that Torah, and that leads then to the final piece. So far again, we've seen that you need to have judges. And officers, and you have a high court, where you have questions, and now you have some form of government, and that government has to be careful that to understand it's not working for itself, it's working for the people, it's bound by God's laws and the Torah, and then finally the Torah presents in this parsha the idea of the Navi, of the prophet, and the Torah says the following. It says Navi, let me get the exact pasuk. Torah says it talks about a false prophet and what do you do? But then it says Navi akim lahem mikerav achechem kamocha. From amongst you, I will appoint a prophet. And Nasati Dvarai Bifiv, and I will place my words in his mouth. Diberlehem, and I will speak through him. He will speak to you. He'll speak to them. Iskol Asher Tzaven, whatever I command. And so the Navi's role was to be, I guess, like the moral guide for the people, right? The role of the Navi would be to be like their moral conscience, and to steer the Jewish people in the right direction, where perhaps sometimes they may be wavering. Like the Navi, sort of, some levels the Navi is similar to the Kohen. The Kohen, on some level, also did that, but the Kohen was more like day to day. The Kohen is like the rabbis, guiding the people, teaching the people. The Navi was the one who received messages from Hashem and had to convey that to the people when Hashem had these major things that had to be that had to be shared with the people. And what's fascinating is that who did the Navi talk to? So the Navi could talk to anyone. The Navi could share to the extent, and this we know from Sefer Malachim, that even to the king himself, right? That the Navi was that moral voice towards the king, and would have to not mince words when the king was going astray, when the king was not getting the message of carrying the Sefer Torah, of having too many horses, too many wives, gold and silver, and the king was, turning aside. It was that Navi who had to stand strong, and we know from Sefer Malachim it wasn't always easy for these Nevi'im. Sometimes these kings were tough people. They gave a lot of difficulty. They and aggravation to the Nevi'im. But the kings that really were stood head and shoulders above the rest were the ones who listened to the Navi, and probably the most powerful interaction of a Navi and a king. There are a lot of powerful ones, but the one I just want to bring up now, I can talk more about the Shabbos afternoon. I'm talking more about this famous story, is David HaMelech and Nathan HaNavi. And when David sins with Bathsheba, right? So it's Nathan has to go to him and basically tell him David what a terrible thing that he did. And to David's eternal credit, what is David? He finally says one word. He finally says, "Chatasi, I've sinned." Right, but it took the Navi to have the guts, to tell David to set him straight. But that's a critical component within this Jewish system, right? Can you imagine ancient times, like some religious figure, telling off the king? So in some Christian societies, that would happen. There'd be like a priest or something, would sort of be but it was like a dangerous job if you're in that position. But that's something that the Torah outlines is critical. That because at the end of the day, the king is it's not necessarily a job you're doing. You're not doing. You don't become king in the Jewish system for the covet, because you're basically there a servant of the people. You represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have to follow the dictates of the Torah, and you're there to help the people. It's not about the wealth and the honor. It's about representing the people to the nations of the world, to being a to setting an example for the people. Right? It's the king who has to read the Torah on Hakel, right, on the Sukkos after the Shemitah year. He has to publicly read the Torah to everyone, but he has to be good at what he does in terms of everything that the government needs to provide. But he ultimately answers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so this is the system that the Torah outlines in our parsha. You have your judges, and you have your officers, and you have your high court, and you have your king slash system of government. Again, the Netziv and the Ramban about that perhaps there's a little bit of a leeway in terms of what type of government you can have, and it could perhaps change from time to time based upon the needs of the people. And that, but whatever that government is, there's restrictions on that government. There's that Sefer Torah. And then there's that moral voice, that moral conscience of the Navi, that hopefully keeps everyone in line. And this is like the ideal type of system that the Torah outlines. Now, it didn't always work, and unfortunately, there were many failures. But there were some times in Jewish history where it was somewhat successful early on in Shlomo HaMelech's reign, during periods of David HaMelech's reign, times of Chizkiyahu's reign and Yoshio. There were moments where this was successful, and this is, and I think when the Netziv end off with this, I think it's like what the Netziv is suggesting is that this is the type of system in theory should work anywhere, Jew or non-Jew, to have this type of system, law and order, and fair laws, a place where people can go to ask questions and have them resolved, and then creating a government that's not in it for themselves and their honor and their wealth and their power, but they're there to serve the people, the laws that govern that government, and that there should be and that the government itself needs someone or some system that keeps it in line, and from time to time perhaps has to remind it to whether or not veering away from what its stated purpose and what it is supposed to be doing. So again, it doesn't always work out the way it's supposed to. But this is the ideal, and this is what how the Torah presents itself. And as the Jewish people are about to enter the land of Israel, as Moshe is giving his final speech, he's trying to encourage them that this is the system that will work. If you're able to implement it, then you'll find a lot of success, and a lot of and it'll be good for the rulers, it'll be good for the people, it'll be good for the society, the Jewish people, and hopefully all those who they influence as well. Okay. Wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos.